from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
This is The Blitz. The first look at the top stories in Seattle sports.
Come on, we need big energy. Let's go. We're just getting warmed up.
The rundown on everything Seattle sports on your way to work.
Swing and a fly ball. Deep right center field. He did it again.
And the stories everyone is talking about.
Russell takes the time. Looks over the top. He's got him in.
Let's go. Let's go to work.
This is The Blitz at 6.
Come on.
Good morning, friends. Welcome to The Blitz at 6. Lydia Cruz alongside with you Tuesday, October 15th. Seahawks are 5-1. You can keep saying it to yourself. It's exciting. We'll hear from Pete Carroll on that record, on the really good road win in Pete's mind. Maybe a little too interesting for some people, but what did Pete have to say about getting that win in Cleveland? Also, huge news, Jaron Reed in the building for the first time yesterday. His 6-game suspension is up. What could having Jay Reed back do for the pass rush, which was relatively ineffective against Cleveland? And let's just say all this year has been missing something, that X factor. Could it be Jaron Reed? Pete Carroll also on Will Disley's injury. Unfortunate for him. And it looks like, barring something miraculous, according to Pete, you will not see Will Disley back this season. Although Pete, as being very Pete-like, said, don't ever rule out anything miraculous. Who will go in his place? Ed Dixon, how is he doing? And then also on the offensive line, Dwayne Brown maybe looking like he might not make it back this week. And Fluker still day-to-day. So we'll discuss some possibilities up front on the O-line. It's all ahead. Plus, how do you game plan for Lamar Jackson? He can do it all, according to Pete. So it's all ahead in this hour. Also, pretty crazy game of Monday Night Football yesterday. A lot of controversy surrounding that one. The Nationals, meanwhile, one game away from heading to their first World Series. What does that mean for the Mariners? All ahead in this hour. Right now, let's get to your headlines.
Yeah, it was a real challenge, and just going on the road is a challenge in itself, and our guys came to play again. It didn't look like it early on, but we were there to, for the long haul, and we needed to be. And the mentality and the conversations on the sidelines and at halftime and coming out of halftime, and guys were in a really good space and prepared to win the game. And so when the opportunities, arose, our guys jumped at it and we got it done. It was good, really good win.
That was Pete Carroll sitting down with Danny and Gallant and Michael Bumpus yesterday out at the VMAC to talk about that win. Said the team was prepared for adversity.
We spend a lot of time on what it takes to perform really well, in difficult times. And we try to create those opportunities, and we're in the conversation a lot. We've got language for it. Our guys are not unfamiliar with what it's going to feel like when it's going to be hard and tough and all that. I think we're poised there because of the preparation. We'll continue to get better at it, but there's no question that this is not a foreign, kind of area to be in for us.
What? No. Seahawks fans, you believe that. You know that adversity. You've been through these close wins before, and some on the other side, the close losses. One area of concern is the pass rush, but big news this week because Jaron Reed is headed back. Pete Carroll on his return.
Yeah. It's great to have Jay Reed come back to us. He's like a little kid, at Christmas time. He's so excited to be back with his teammates and to be back with us. It seemed like it went kind of fast to us. It didn't for him. I asked him specifically that. It seemed like it took forever. He's been such an integral part of our club. It's great to have him back in the locker room. And his play is, exceptional too. So I don't know what to tell you about how it's going to go. I haven't seen him, on the field yet. I know he worked really hard from everything he said to stay abreast with his conditioning and all of that, and he looks good and strong and all, and we'll just have to wait and see how he handles it.
Yeah, speaking of that conditioning, after missing 6 weeks, what can you expect reasonably from a guy like Reed?
Kind of like injuries a little bit, but we haven't seen him at all. It's the first day we've seen him in a month and a half, so generally it just depends on each guy, I know he worked diligently and from what he said and his routine and all of that, so we're expecting that he'll be able to help us this week. I don't know how much.
Reed is coming off a 10.5 sack season, so could be a huge boost for Seattle there up front. Also, the difference between his play and guys like Puna Ford and Al Woods, that's not their strong suit per se.
He's a big factor. He's a big factor, the spacing that happens with the guy that causes problems there, and the sets that happen to take care of him, open up areas and spaces for the other guys. And we've been rushing with Allen as a nose tackle playing a three technique, and you've seen this with Puna too. Those guys are nose tackle types, and they're not, you know, that's not their strong point. You know, they're run defenders and terrific run defenders at that. So when we mix it up now and we get Quentin Jefferson in there and Jay Reed, it's going to be a better look for us, and it's going to be more of a problem for our opponent. Hopefully that'll open up things for everybody.
The team not able to get to Baker Mayfield on Sunday. What was with the lack of pass rush versus the Browns?
Ball came out
lightning fast to a ton of quick game and their RPO stuff, and they limited the amounts of times to rush, and they did a nice job in that. You know, for the most part, we had a couple plays that got away from us, but for the most part, we were able to maintain control of that, but we just weren't able to get to them. And so passing efficiency for the day, you know, we kind of like, we would have taken 50-something, whatever it was, you know, if we knew that was going to happen regardless of how the brush was. So we were effective, but in pass rush, just the numbers, it stands out a little bit that we didn't get to them.
The other big news of the week, unfortunately, losing Will Dissly, Uncle Will, Billy Bozeman, Pete Carroll on his injury update.
Really unfortunate that we lose Will Dissly. He's been a fantastic part of our team, just a young guy, you know, but he's made a big impression early on all of us, and we're going to miss the heck out of him as he recovers from an Achilles injury.
Don't know the full extent of that yet, but an Achilles injury usually typically pretty serious. And Pete saying, unless something miraculous happens, he will not be back this year.
Unless something, you know, miraculous happens. We don't want to close the door on miraculous.
Although Dis did have an amazing attitude, Pete Carroll said when he was talking to him, he was so upbeat. This is despite coming off a patellar tendon injury the year before, but still had an absolutely great attitude about it.
Yeah, we talked last night in the locker room. His attitude was incredible. You know that he's talking about 2020 already, and you can count on me, and I can't wait to get working. And I mean, just an amazing attitude. It was the attitude that took him through the past rehab, I mean, I hate to get good at something like that, but he's prepared to take this on, and he'll do a fantastic job, and we'll beat all of the time frames that he's faced with, and we'll do a great job returning.
Ed Dixon still has a couple more weeks to come back, but he could be a person that would fill that role if Dis is out for the rest of the year.
Well, he's still got a couple weeks yet before he can come back. He's working really hard. He's doing everything. He's running and lifting and doing all that, all that he's allowed to do. What will be, you know, telling us is when he finally can come back on the field. Can he, you know, do the football moves and the football, you know, regimen and respond and be okay with that? He's working to get ready right now. So we're very fortunate to have a chance to have a guy like Ed come back to us, and, you know, with not too much of a space in there, you know, without Will.
All right, Luke Wilson and Jacob Hollister, hero seasons. I see it happening on the offensive line also, dealing with some injuries. Dwayne Brown out last week, as was DJ Fluker. Ethan Posick placed on IR. But Dwayne Brown, if he's not able to make it this week, Pete saying he should be able to go next week.
We'll wait and see. He feels a lot better this week than he did. It's a day-to-day thing for us right now. It's a race to see if we can get him back. We thought it might be 2 weeks, you know, if it didn't go quicker than that. So we'll see. If he doesn't make it this week, he should be in great shape to come back next week.
Dealing with the biceps issue, and said that he actually re-aggravated it prior to the Rams game, and now they're just wanting to be cautious and safe with it. DJ Fluker at this point, day-to-day, according to Pete?
We're day-to-day on Fluke. He's going to work out, you know, Monday, today, and tomorrow, and we'll just take him through each day and see how he comes along and see if he can respond. We don't know right now if he'll make it or not.
In their place, you saw Jamarco Jones, George Fant, Joey Hunt filling in. How did they do?
Jamarco did another nice job. He was very consistent again and held up his end. So that's two really great showings for him. He did a fine job for us. George did a really nice job in the running game. Had a couple opportunities in the pass game. He would like to clean up some of his sets, but was pretty typical for a first time out starter against some good guys. He did a good job though. You know, we really were able to maintain the style of play and everything with those guys out there, and now, Joey contributed a little bit of tight end for us as well. So I think the coaches did a really nice job of mixing and matching and keeping us on track.
Phil Haynes also somebody that could be ready to go. He's just been waiting 6 weeks for his 6 weeks to be out.
Phil Haynes comes back to us this week. We're anxious to see Phil. He's been ready for a number of weeks, but having to wait for the six-week period to end, he comes to us, and I'm excited to see what he can do.
Pete Carroll also saying Rashad Penny will be full speed in his mind by Wednesday. So that's good news. Finally, game planning for Lamar Jackson, a quarterback who can seemingly do it all.
He's doing everything. I mean, he's doing everything you can think of. And they run every play. They got every scheme. They've got every pass action. He can throw the ball all over the field. He's down the field. He's got a good quick game accuracy. On the move stuff, he can do everything. And so it's a remarkable offense that they're putting together right now, and it's very challenging.
Up next on the Blitz, Danny O'Neill joins me. Russell Wilson's headset went out during that Cleveland Browns game. He called some of the plays, and it was some of the most impressive offense of the afternoon. What does that mean for play calling in the future? It's next on the Blitz right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Blitz from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Welcome back to The Blitz at 6. Lydia Cruz alongside with you. Just can't rush Tribe, you know? You just gotta wait. Right now, joined by Danny O'Neill. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you, Lydia?
I'm great. After watching that game on Sunday, I've had a day for my blood pressure to sort of go down.
It's the way it always is.
Breathe. I know. It's always that way, and yet your expectation for things being different or better will never go away. That's just human, right?
You always want it to be easy, or do you just accept that comes the pain?
No. Definitely don't want it to always be easy, but you would like maybe once in a while for it to be easy.
I feel like there are certain templates for Seattle road games. The first one being they come out and absolutely don't look like they know how to play offense for the first 28 minutes.
Okay.
Like where it's just brutal. The equivalent of slamming your hand in a car door repeatedly.
Yikes.
And then all of a sudden it's the 2-minute drive. Russell drives him down the field. They kick a field goal or probably score a touchdown. And you're like, why was that so hard? It's still a close game and you're in for a nail biter of a second half. This was the other variety in which, man, they come out and absolutely get bombed to start the game. And you're like, did they not make the trip? What exactly happened? Man, this is... And even as I was sitting there watching it with some of my dearest friends, Tom and Jody Kelly and their son Andy from Bainbridge Island were out here. And we all said it, like, it's going to get close in the second half. I don't know if they'll win it. But I know that they're going to have the ball with the chance to tie or take the lead in the fourth quarter. I don't care how lopsided it gets here in the second quarter, because that's the way the Seahawks play. And I think that as much scrutiny as there is over the style of football that Pete Carroll coaches and wants his team to play, these past two games are pretty good demonstrations of the value of it and why he's won so many games playing that way.
And it's an interesting juxtaposition with what Sean McVay and his team are going through right now. And that team being lauded as, you know, the next big thing last year and had now lost three in a row. And I was thinking about it the other day. I mean, how much criticism has Pete gotten for not being more like him last year or the last 2 years? And then the thing is that Pete Carroll, whatever complaints you might have about his system or his identity, I mean, they win football games.
They do. And they do it with a form. I'm still not convinced you can win a Super Bowl playing the way Pete does with an average, maybe even below average defense. I think you need a good defense, even if you have a great quarterback. But the jury's still out on that part. It does win football games, though, and it keeps you from ever getting blown out. It doesn't ever happen. Seattle doesn't. New England has been a more successful team. New England gets blown out more often than the Seahawks do. Usually there's a game, and I'm not sure if one happened.
New England always weird loses to, like, Miami or the Jets or, like, some weird, I don't know. They just always find a way to lose to just a weird division opponent or something.
Or even in 2014, man, week three, they got bombed by the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, that's right.
In the year, I mean, and it was Tom Brady's no good. Tom Brady might be old. Like, there were epitaphs written on the Patriots run. Like, that generally doesn't, there's only two times since Russell Wilson's been quarterback that the Seahawks have been blown out. They got blown out in a December game against Green Bay, and then they got smoked at home by the Rams 2 years ago. And that's it. Those are the only two blowout losses that they've suffered. And when they're in close games, they don't win them all, but they win more than their fair share, I think in large part because of Russell Wilson. So I do tend to, if you ask me, I think Seattle would be better off throwing the ball more than they do. But you can't, there's a value to the results, and these past two games really demonstrate that value of when you give your opponent enough room to shoot themselves in the foot, more often than not in today's NFL, they will comply with that request. They will commit hari kari. I've taken to thinking of Baker Mayfield. He's cocky Russell Wilson. Like Kyler Murray is fast, small Russell Wilson. Baker Mayfield is cocky Russell Wilson. And look, there's only one Russell Wilson because there's only one guy that's able to play the way he does without committing turnovers.
Yeah, and again, still no interceptions through six games now, which is pretty darn incredible.
Do you going to knock on some wood? We got to find something to wrap on. 207.
Should we do a sort of a seance or something?
Or either that or just on my skull. Just wrap knuckles to my skull. 207 straight regular season pass attempts, no picks.
That's crazy.
It's great.
Russell continues to amaze me, and that's weird because we're here and we're in our bubble and we think maybe, you know, it's just one of those things where maybe we're a little biased, and then you look at the numbers and it doesn't seem to be that way. I wanted to ask you about Russ actually, because his helmet going out in that game was an interesting moment. Pete said yesterday, I'm going to play you this audio, you've heard it, but when Russ's headset went out and he had to call plays for a little while, one of their most productive offensive drives, Pete said he was fired up about it.
That's fired up for him. You know, he lives for those kinds of opportunities, and he did a great job. Took it over, made a couple great calls, and moved the ball right down the field. And Shotty was screaming at the guys, get the other helmet, you know, organized and get out in the field. So he was busy doing that. But, it was a good opportunity, a good moment in the game for Russ to take charge of it, and he did quite well.
You better believe Shotty was yelling for the other helmet because he's job security right there. If Russell keeps doing this, they're not going to need me. I'm going to become obsolete.
What did you make of that? What did you make of the head coach being? Is that just Pete's demeanor because he's generally going to say something positive about that situation when maybe he was feeling a little more freaked out at the time, or does he really trust Russell that much?
I think he genuinely greets challenges that come up as opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's a better demonstration than that cut you just played, Lydia, that most coaches would freak out and would get irate at what has led to that happening. Why isn't it working? Why can't we get this two-bit technology? Mm-hmm. Why are you screwing up my plans? Because now my quarterback can't hear my coaching staff. And instead, Pete's like, well, you know what? Stuff happens, and what an opportunity for Russ, and he loves these chances. I mean, I don't think there's one other coach in the league that would react the way Pete reacted, which is awesome. Hey, Russ, you wanted a chance to do this. Go do it. It's fantastic. And you can look at it and say, getting mad actually wouldn't help anything, right? Just from a purely pragmatic, take away the whole what it says about your philosophy, your approach, or your confidence in your player.
Mm-hmm.
What would getting mad accomplish?
Nothing.
Would it get the problem fixed faster, or would it potentially undermine the confidence some of your players had when you're going to have to rely on them until the technology gets fixed? And since you're not an engineer, you don't know when it's going to get fixed. Would it make them feel like, oh man, we've just got to hold things down? I think there is a purely practical value from his fatal optimism, as he's phrased it.
Fatalistically optimistic. I really love it. Well, all right, Danny. Well, that bodes well because also no other teams have Russell Wilson. So there is that factor, too. When you're trusting your quarterback, at least it's Russell Wilson. It's impressive.
He is. Do you know which Game of Thrones character he is?
Well, oh, man. Russell Wilson or Pete?
No, Russell Wilson and Pete. I'd accept nominations for Pete as well.
Hmm.
We're doing this at 8:15 today.
Okay.
And you got to have your Game of Thrones because I'm out of my depth here. I'm already admitting it with Gallant and Jessamine and you. You guys are going to quibble over the final parts, the finer parts of Westeros comparisons for the NFL in general and the Seahawks in particular.
All right. I like this. All right, Danny. We're going to talk Game of Thrones today. This is a good
day. That's right. We're going to talk them thrones.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
Talk to you soon, Lydia.
Danny and Gallant at 7 a.m. this morning, and some Game of Thrones talk coming later at you. Up next on the Blitz, though, a devastating injury to Will Dissly over the weekend. We heard from Pete Carroll on it. We'll hear from his teammate in the tight end room, Luke Wilson. It's next on the Blitz right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is the Blitz.
Welcome back to the Blitz 6. Lydia Cruz alongside with you Tuesday, October 15th. Thanks to Danny O'Neill for hanging out a few minutes ago. Right now, devastating injury to Will Dissly over the weekend. Husky fans loved him at UW. Seahawks fans have loved him on the field. And unfortunately now on the side of two terrible injuries, patella tendon injury and now an Achilles injury. We don't know the full extent of it. Pete Carroll still a little tight-lipped on that and waiting for some test results. But we do know that it would be nothing short of miraculous to see him back here on the field this season, although he has a great attitude about the rehab process, according to Pete. We also got to hear from one of his teammates, Luke Wilson, in the tight end room, and just what he means to this team, how they will rebound after that. This was him speaking to the professor, speaking to John Clayton Post. Game.
So, Luke, I guess the bad news is, you know, what ended up happening to Will Dissly with the Achilles, that had to be sad.
Yeah, it's terrible, man. You know, I saw him on the ground there, an eerie feeling, and especially, you know, the way he's been playing, and just, you know, I know he's a younger guy, but he's becoming and kind of is a leader in this locker room. I'm sick for him, man, but that being said, I know him. I know his attitude. He'll get this thing back and get going again. Just a tough break, but it'll make for an even better story for him when he gets back.
Yeah. How good do you think he is?
You know, I think that he's one of the few guys in this league who's just very complete. And the thing that I've been most impressed in the last, you know, 3-4 weeks I've been here is mentally he's much farther beyond a second-year guy. You know, just very calm, very cool out there, but, you know, his reading of coverages, his understanding of what we're trying to accomplish is very impressive. So, you know, that's going to take him and his career as long as he wants to go.
I know this is what you weren't looking for, but now this creates an opportunity for you to start.
Yeah, you know what? I haven't even really thought that far into it, but to be honest with you, John, I mean, you've been around this team long enough where I think today was a prime example. It's a selfless team, you know, and I think that's our edge. When we win games like this on the road that are tough, if we really don't care, like, who scores, who does this, who does that. I mean, we had a bunch of different guys make a ton of plays today, and for me, you know, whatever they ask me next week, I need to be more of a run guy. They want me more involved in the pass game. I don't know what that's going to look like, but I'm going to just try and do my best and help the team win.
I guess the other thing, when you look at this, since you left and came back, How much better is Russell Wilson?
A tremendous amount, but I think that what has been most impressive to me is just his command of the huddle. You know, I've never been around something like this before. And he's always had great command of the huddle. I don't want to, like, put that out there, but, I mean, he just, when he gets in that huddle right now, everybody's hanging off everything he says. I think that he's taken some tremendous steps on the off-the-field stuff, talking to guys, this offense. I mean, he's just an absolute warrior, man. And we're seeing that week in and week out. It's special, man. It's special for me just to be a small part of it.
Well, what I'm also amazed at, obviously, you can see that he's worked on his core as far as throwing and making even more accuracy. But the big thing is now how calm he is, even making the adjustments. Like, he'll get you in motion and all that stuff and do it at the last minute.
Yeah, like I said, I think confidence is a great way to put it. He just feel like, you know, as a guy in that huddle, he's just in control of everything. Like you said, motions, pre-snap, post-snap. I mean, a couple extended plays today. Didn't seem like there was as many as last Thursday, but I haven't seen it all on film, but a couple like, well, you know, he's rolling out, and then all of a sudden, strike guys right on the money. It's very impressive to see.
Luke, thanks.
Thanks, sir.
MVP, MVP, MVP. Just starting that campaign, you know, chanting here. And that was Luke Wilson with the professor, John Clayton. As always, you can listen to John's show from 10 a.m. to noon, and you can also download his podcast, 710sports.com. Also, yesterday on Bob, Dave, and More, Joey Hunt joining the guys. There's been a lot of movement, a lot of changes up front on that offensive line with injuries to DJ Fluker, Ethan Posick, and Dwayne Brown. What was it like standing in on Sunday?
Is it a huge, because we've talked to of different players and you know, Big Ray Roberts and you talk about, yeah, it feels it to the common man, we go, well, he's playing guard. It's a step to the left or a step to the right. But it's not that simple. It's a different world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's definitely a different world. I mean, as you make your way out, honestly. I mean, I feel like the thing at center is you have no neutral zone. So I feel like that's a big difference when you go center or guard, is you got to gain that neutral zone. I feel like I'm used to guys just being on me and his quick hands, everything's faster. And then guards a little bit slower. But, like, if you're a tackle going to guards, vice versa, tackles a little bit more time than going into guard. So the same way, just like that. And then at tight end, again, like, especially on the road, you can barely hear the snap count out there. Like, I have a whole different level of respect for the tight ends now on road games. You can't hear it sometimes. Right. And so just being, like, further back off the ball and that's different, just timing, your hands, everything. And just getting a rhythm of it, just getting a feel of it, like real-life reps, fast game reps, I feel like is definitely different. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still football. I mean, you're talking about, like, split second, and then once you get engaged, it's the same. I mean, you're trying to get hands inside, you know, leverage, all that stuff is all the same.
So since it was your first game playing tight end, I imagine you didn't campaign for them throwing the ball to you.
I played tight end actually in the Arizona game last year, the last Arizona game.
Did you?
Played a few plays, yes, sir. But no, I actually on the where they threw the flag, the guy on the far end zone on the Lockett, they called a touchdown, reversed it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they actually threw a flag for a lineman downfield because the far ref didn't, I guess, pay attention to the other ref when he said I reported.
Right.
And I was actually on all day on, like, a route coming out, like, for but I know Russ wasn't going to throw me the ball. And I look on the film, there's, like, three guys behind me, so it's probably a good thing he did throw me the ball.
That was driving me nuts yesterday because they fixed it.
Obviously.
I heard over the loudspeaker the guy say that you reported.
Exactly.
And then they call you down.
Yeah.
They weren't together.
Yeah, he didn't. I mean, well, and it's really on – the far ref because he just threw the flag and they were together because the guy in the white hat who I report to, I'm like, I'm going to him. I know he looked me dead in the eyes and he's the main one you got to report to. I'm going to him. And like five, everybody on the team, they all knew all the people out there, five guys go up to him. Like Fetty's yelling, he reported. And the guy in the white hat's like, I got you. Like, I got it. Like, he's like, we're good. Like, we're waving it off. And then it was just the far ref. I guess he just wasn't paying attention when he said he reported and then didn't click in when he saw me downfield is what it was. And when I saw the flag down on the far side of the field, I'm like, it's not going to be holding or anything because no one's going to be on this type of play. And I was like, he's definitely throwing this on me because he called it on Cleveland earlier. And sure enough, I'm hearing going up to the ref, yeah, we got a legal lineman downfield, 53. I'm like, oh, that's when everyone jumped on him.
Yeah.
It was funny, though.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, I'm curious, how would you describe yourself to someone who doesn't know you?
I don't know. I'd say I'm a pretty diverse individual, I feel like you would say. I feel like I get along with everybody. I'm pretty dry would be another thing. Can be a little smart-ass.
Dry sense of humor.
Yeah. That's really one.
Yeah, because you seem like a real easygoing, laid-back kind of guy that is real likable in the locker room and elsewhere.
Yes, sir. I hope that's the case. I feel like I can get along with anybody, honestly, and I feel like I do get along with any guys from any types of the different types of background. Honestly, I feel like I can relate to guys personally. I feel like that's something I like to do, and I just feels naturally to do.
You know, I've given people this advice to like keep a journal of the funny things that you hear in the locker room because it's not like that on the outside.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And there's lots of characters in football.
Oh,
right?
No, that's for sure. You meet some characters in the locker room. Yeah. That's 100%. I mean, yeah, you tell people. I mean, that's why that's funny though, just keeping logs. I'm like, man, that's some story. We were talking about that in training camp. Someone did something. And I was like, man, that's something I'm going to have to just tell people about from future. Like, I know from now on that's going to be a story I'm telling.
who's the funniest guy in that locker room? Who just cracks you up no matter what they're talking about?
I mean, DJ Fluker's a character for sure. I say Big Fluke.
He gets you fired up.
Yeah,
he? That guy's so excited.
Yeah, he's for sure excited. He gets excited about everything. And then he's just a character, honestly. I mean, he's from Louisiana. He's got a big personality, and it's awesome.
Last year after you played Detroit, he was going against Snacks Harrison,
mm-hmm.
and he was like mumbling out loud to himself about Snacks Harrison and talking about, man, it says 350 on the roster, but that guy's at least 400 pounds, and it's going on and on.
Yeah.
And, like, nobody was listening to him, and so I was standing there. I was like, I'm listening to you, Fluke. But he was just, like, this running dialogue.
Yes, exactly.
As he gets on the bus. But, yeah, you got some characters.
Exactly. You've seen it.
Some characters on this offensive line. What? No. They're ones that hopefully will be back out on the field as well. DJ Fluker, day-to-day. According to Pete Carroll. And up next on the Blitz, we'll discuss some of those injury updates, including also Dwayne Brown, Rashad Penny, and what Will Dissly's injury will mean for the tight end room. Also, Jaron Reed back in the building, which could be huge for the pass rush. We also will get to Mike Leach, who is instituting a new rule for his team after their third loss on Saturday. And also, finally, Chris Peterson speaking on the offensive struggles in the first half of the game for the Huskies. All ahead in the Hot List right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Blitz from the Alaska Airlines Studio. It's time for The Hot List.
Holy mackerel!
The headlines for the day in sports every morning at 6:45.
Heck yes! What are we missing here?
A full breakdown of the top stories of today on your morning drive.
Let's go!
Well, some controversy on Monday Night Football yesterday. Mason Crosby nailing a 23-yard field goal as time expired, and the Green Bay Packers ended up edging out the Detroit Lions 23-22 on Monday Night Football. We've seen Aaron Rodgers come up big in these types of moments. But hard to argue that Green Bay was not the beneficiary of some very questionable officiating calls yesterday, which sparked more conversation. Up first, the stats, though. Aaron Rodgers completing 24 of 39 passes, 283 yards, and two touchdowns, despite being without Devontae Adams, including a beautiful 35-yard throw to Alan Lazard for his first career touchdown. Rodgers linked up with Jamal Williams for the other touchdown. His head coach, Matt LaFleur, on how Rodgers always keeps them in the game.
There were certainly some drops out there that our guys would like to have back, but you know, Aaron's so consistent, and that's why he is who he is. Anytime you have a quarterback like that, you always believe that you can come back and win a football game. And I think our guys believe that as well.
Green Bay, 5-1 now, captured its first win in five tries against its NFC North rival. The Packers are off to their first 3-0 start in the NFC North since 2012. Might not have pulled it off, though, without some calls going their way. Two fourth quarter penalties for illegal hands to the face against Detroit's Trey Flowers, both of them on third downs. The first set up Lazard's touchdown, and the second allowed Green Bay to run the clock down to 2 seconds before Crosby's game winner. In both cases, replays showed Flowers' hands clearly on the neck or shoulder, not the face of a Packers lineman. Referee Cleet Blakeman said each of the calls was made by umpire Jeff Rice, and he discussed the last one with him. Booger McFarland on the call yesterday talking about how the refs took away the Lions' chance to win.
But in the end, Trey Flowers gets two bad calls against him. And listen, I get it. The officials have a tough job. But we as players, we only get 16 shots at this, Scotty, and each one of them count a lot. And for the officials, in a crucial situation, okay, there's a sack one time, and you call Trey Flowers for illegal hands to the face, and then you basically end the game with another what I would call bogus illegal hands to the face. I think the Lions are going to feel like they outplayed the Packers tonight and that the officials took this one away.
Ryan Clark also with some thoughts on that as well.
Without those calls, without that call late in the game, then Matt Stafford, who had played really well throughout this game and started this game on fire, he has an opportunity to go down and score and put his team in scoring position with an opportunity to win.
Also, that they could end up haunting the Lions' playoff chances.
Flag up. And when you do that to a team that's fought this hard on the road, coming off a heartbreaking loss at home to KC, now you put a team that could be 10-6, 11-5 in a position to be 8-8 on the outside looking into the playoffs.
Matt Patricia, Lions head coach, on those late penalties hurting his team.
You know, we all know we can't have those penalties, you know, whatever it was that caused those to take place. So we're going to go back, take a look at it, make sure we're coaching it better, make sure we're doing the right things, and, you know, just can't have them. We know how dangerous they are and how, you know, detrimental those penalties are.
Matt Prater, though, was good from 26, 22, 41, 51, and 54 yards for the Lions yesterday. Matthew Stafford finished 18 of 32 for 265 yards, was sacked three times. Kerryon Johnson scored the lone touchdown for the Lions from 1 yard out in the first quarter. Also, just Rodgers continuing to up on the Packers' record books, surpassed 3,000 career rushing yards on a 12-yard run in the fourth quarter. He's the 13th Packers player to reach that milestone. Matt Stafford, for his part, though, on the red zone struggles for the Lions.
Yeah, no doubt. No story of the game, in my opinion. You know, I thought our defense played, you know, well enough for us to win the game. We made some big plays on offense. We just didn't put the ball in the end zone. Can't do that, you know, on the road against a good team. You know, they made the plays at the end of the game to beat us.
Matt Patricia saying, though, that not focusing on those calls and just needing to move forward and focus on next week for his team.
I mean, the good thing about the squad, I love coaching the squad. They're a tough team. They're mentally tough. They know it. You know, that's a great locker room in there. They're pulling together right now. You know, they're all stepping up and doing everything that they can to try to get it right, you know. So we don't got a lot of time to, you know, reflect. We got to move forward. We're on a short week. We got to get going. We got Minnesota coming in home, and we got to travel here tonight, so.
Speaking of locker rooms, the Cougars might be changing up theirs a little bit. I know they will be because Mike Leach instituting a new rule, now a social media ban for his players. Paul Feinbaum commenting on this and saying he thinks it was the wrong decision, understands the thought behind it, but might have an effect down the line on recruiting.
When you ban that, it not only affects the players on the team, it has a deleterious effect on future recruits. If I'm a recruit and I read that, I'm saying, I'm not going there. Mike Leach is a cool guy. He's the Pirate. But there's no way in the world I'm going to play for a guy that is going to infringe my freedom. I mean, this is America here, not to give a patriotic speech, but that is absurd. And I think it will cost them players. And frankly, I wouldn't go there if I were a recruit right now in high school, because I'm not playing for a coach that's going to take away my freedom to express myself. And there may be some limitations on what you should or shouldn't say, but don't take it away.
Okay, Paul. We also got to hear from Chris Peterson yesterday on the Monday press conference and him talking to the media about their win over the weekend.
You know, second half, finally got a little something going on offense and, you know, hit a couple explosive plays and get a little momentum and rhythm going, and that can change some things. So, you know, as always, we got a bunch of things that we're working on and, you know, better get them tightened up here pretty quickly.
So what was with the first half offensive struggles against Arizona?
It's a great question. I mean, we got into a rhythm. We stayed on the field, hit a couple explosives. You know, I mean, it wasn't like we went in there and like, okay, we had the same type of stuff on the game plan. And we're able to make a couple plays. And it was great to get Puka in there and kind of spark this. And you know, we just really got no momentum going. I mean, we kind of talked about this after the game. The red zone was more frustrating than anything. We get huge momentum plays to get the ball, and then we don't do anything there. And that was, you know, that's almost what we were going backwards, kind of deflating in terms of, you know, even kicking the field goal. You're not wanting to do that. And so that was, you know, really, I think that rattled everybody, the guys. And so that's kind of how, you know, how the first half went. We were just kind of no rhythm whatsoever. You know, we just didn't get anything going, to stay on the field and convert third downs, you know, those type of things. And then the second half got a little better.
One cool thing was watching Puka Nacua in that game. He provides a spark for this offense, according to Coach Peterson.
Kind of mentioned Puka there, kind of what he brought to the table. What?
Yeah, Puka, you know, I think one of the things I enjoy most about Puka is really the energy that he brings. You know, I mean, you see him making plays, and that's awesome, but he's a really great energy guy. He's a great energy guy. He's been here since he's been here. He's like really good in the locker room, and you know, for a freshman to like feel him like we do is great. And so now it's awesome that we're getting more involved and he's making plays. I mean, he was a guy that sparked so much of it.
If you're keeping up with baseball playoffs, yesterday Steven Strasburg was Steven Strasburg. His curveball's ridiculous. Silenced the Cardinals, struggling bats, the Nationals. Postseason star Howie Kendrick doubled three times and drove in three more runs. Washington took a 3-0 series lead in the best of seven NLCS by beating St. Louis soundedly 8-1 on Monday night. It's a win that puts Washington on the verge, one win away from the city's first World Series in 86 years. Mike Schilt, the Cardinals manager, on not expecting their offense to be so poor.
You play these guys with that pitching, I mean,
you know, you're going to be in for typically a low-scoring situation. But I got to say this, you know, as we tip our hat, we also got to say that we didn't expect to be, you know, have scored two runs in three games by any stretch of the imagination. You know, like I say, we respect our opponent. These guys have done a great job of pitching. They've had a good game plan. They've executed their game plan. But by no means did we have anywhere close to the expectation that we would be pretty much shut down. Like I said, it can turn on a dime.
If the Nationals are able to get that final win, then they would head to the World Series, and the Mariners would be the lone team left out in the cold to have not been to the World Series. But it's going to happen. It's going to happen, guys, Mariners fans. Pete Carroll speaking yesterday to the media, first of all, impressed with a really good road win in his mind.
Yeah, it was a real challenge, and just going on the road is a challenge in itself, and our guys came to play again. It didn't look like it early on, but we were there to, you know, for the long haul. And we needed to be. And the mentality and the conversations on the sidelines and at halftime and coming out of halftime, and guys were in a really good space and prepared to win the game. And so when the opportunities, you know, arose, our guys jumped at it and we got it done. It was good, really good win.
While the pass rush may have been a little non-existent, wasn't able to get to Baker Mayfield on Sunday, good news for it is that Jaron Reed is headed back after this week. His six-game suspension is up. He was able to be in team facilities yesterday. Pete Carroll said he was like a kid after Christmas, just excited to get back on the field.
Yeah, yeah, it's great to have Jay Reed come back to us. He's like a little kid, you know, at Christmas time. He's so excited to be back with his teammates and to be back with us. It seemed like it went kind of fast to us. It didn't for him. I asked him specifically that. It seemed like it took forever. He's been such an integral part of our club. It's great to have him back in the locker room. His play is, you know, exceptional too. So I don't know what to tell you about how it's going to go. I haven't seen him, you know, on the field yet. I know he worked really hard from everything he said to stay abreast with his conditioning and all of that, and he looks good and strong and all, and we'll just have to wait and see how he handles it.
On the difference that he could make to the pass rush being a big factor, coming off a 10.5 sack season, and also with guys like Puna Ford and Al Woods, that not being their strong suit.
He's a big factor. He's a big factor, you know, and the spacing that happens with the guy that causes problems there, and the sets that happen to take care of him, open up areas and spaces for the other guys. And we've been rushing with Al and as a nose tackle playing a three technique. And you've seen this with Puna too. Those guys are nose tackle types. And they're not, you know, that's not their strong point. You know, they're run defenders and terrific run defenders at that. So when we mix it up now and we get Quentin Jefferson in there and Jay Reed, it's going to be a better look for us, and it's going to be more of a problem for our opponent. Hopefully that'll open up things for everybody.
Also, some other injury updates. A really unfortunate injury to Will Dissly, an Achilles injury, and they're going to miss him, according to Pete.
Really unfortunate that we lose Will Dissly. He's been a fantastic part of our team, just a young guy, you know, but he's made a big impression early on all of us, and we're going to miss the heck out of him as he recovers from an Achilles injury.
Said his attitude was really good, though, talking to him, but barring something miraculous happening, they do not expect Will Dis, Uncle Will, Billy Bozeman, to be back this season, although he did have an amazing attitude about the recovery process. In his place, could Ed Dixon be one guy to step up in a couple of weeks?
Well, he's still got a couple weeks yet before he can come back. He's working really hard. He's doing everything. He's running and lifting and doing all that, all that he's allowed to do. What will be, you know, telling us is when he finally can come back on the field. Can he, you know, do the football moves and the football, you know, regimen and respond and be okay with that? He's working to get ready right now. So we're very fortunate to have a chance to have a guy like Ed come back to us, and, you know, with not too much of a space in there, you know, without Will.
Plenty more from Pete coming at you throughout the day here on the station discussing his words. Danny and Gallant next right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.